As the hotel sector tries to keep rates high enough to accommodate heating bills, we're joined by Shona Whitehead, managing partner at Cogent Blue, to discuss how now is not the time to kick back and stop drawing on the creativity and resilience of the pandemic.
Hello and welcome to another episode of New Tricks, which is the podcast from New Dog PR. On the last episode of New Tricks, there was no Catherine, but I'm delighted to report that Catherine is back. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Well, as you do already know, because we have already spoken today, I'm not at the height of my powers. And I put this down to the fact that I have holidayed, albeit for 3 days, but I have holidayed, so therefore I've stopped, so therefore I feel rough. So this is not a great testament. This is not a great PR for hospitality, because it turns out if you do, you then come back ill. So that's the current state.
Maybe the thing is that you came back, not that you went on holiday. So really, you should just go on holiday and then that be it. And wouldn't that be supportive of the sector?
It would be. We're 3.5 seconds away from digital nomading, though, if we go down that
route. No, I'm not saying you have to come back and work. I should say you should go back. No, because digital nomading is no good for anyone. It's just being in a nice place but having to work while you're there, which is the worst possible case scenario. So
yes. And also holidaying involved an aeroplane, which, as we know, incubators for germs. So I would put that down largely to that issue.
Yes. As the French confirmed only this morning, we are in the 9th wave. So mask up, people.
So that was a really, really long-winded and ever so slightly negative way to answer your question. But how are you?
I'm well, because I haven't been on any planes, although I am going to go on planes next month and for long haul, which I don't know about anyone else, but I haven't long hauled since before the pandemic, predominantly. So I'm concerned about two things. One, picking up whatever Emily's got. And two, it's going to be really long. It's going to be really long. So...
But you could use that time to like read or do things that like without the internet. It might be magnificent.
I read.
You do.
But I won't be able to get up and go somewhere else, because like I'll get like exploded at high pressure or catch fire or freezing, isn't it, that would happen if I wandered off somewhere else.
Yes, don't do that.
No. So long haul takes away your capacity to wander off somewhere else.
Maybe that's, well, we look forward. I don't know where I was going with my maybe, as I've mentioned, I'm not feeling very well. But we look forward to the debrief after your long haul.
What would make the difference, of course, is if Top Gun was one of the films and then I could just watch that.
Which it may well be. That timing might work out for you.
I think so. Of course, I could watch it on my laptop, but I always think that that's cheating, bringing your own content.
Yes, it is.
You should be open to the... like slings and arrows of outrageous Virgin Atlantic.
I think you might be all right with the timing. It might work out for you. It might be streaming. Anyway, joining us this week, and we will discuss her holiday.
The meal as well, that sort of thing.
Obviously. Shona Whitehead, who is the managing partner at Cogent Blue, has graced us with her presence this dreary Monday morning, and very happy we are too. Shona, lovely to see you. We can see you, others can hear you. How are you?
Yeah, I am very good, thank you. Lovely to see you too. So I'm in a nice dry office, although it's chucking it down outside, but yeah, this is a nice way to start the day, a cheerful way to start the day. So looking forward to a good chat.
We're going to have a good chat. How have you been? I haven't seen you for a while. Is all well?
Yeah, all is well. I've not been doing going to many events, just because I think coming into the sort of last 12 months, we've been up here with projects and work. So we're full steam ahead work-wise, which is great. But it means a little bit less of going around some of the major events that I would normally be at. So need to get back into that next year.
Well, no, I mean, you know, that's a jolly, jolly way to be. What kind of projects are you working on? Obviously, you know, don't tell us all the confidential details, but what kind of things are people worrying about this week?
I think our business has changed a bit when we came out of COVID. We've been doing a lot of we do work in commercial anyway, so most of our work centres around commercial, and it's either technology, organisation, business processes, consultancy or projects. But a lot of what we're doing now is far more centred around technology. So I think businesses have come out and said, we need to work in a slicker way. We need to make sure our technology platform is robust. So we're doing a lot of kind of either single solution finding or holistic reviews of technology strategy on the commercial side and helping customers to sort of improve their platforms. And then the other thing we're doing a lot of is kind of related to mergers and acquisitions. So businesses that are either acquiring, merging, or sometimes deflagging, and they need support in how do they do that in the most effective way to ensure on that transition day they've still got a business that's running smoothly. So we do quite a lot of that work as well.
And are you seeing more M&A happening at the moment?
From our project work, yes. Yeah, so we're actually having a lot of conversations around can you help us understand we're thinking of doing X with your knowledge of, you know, the luxury sector or the mid-market sector or London or provinces. Can you sit down and talk us through what are the pros and cons we need to look at? What should we be thinking about when we start working on this project, etc.? So I think what I'm seeing is, I'm not sure if it's related to an increase in M&A, but it's an increase in businesses wanting to get advice before they push the button on what that might look like in the future.
So it's not stress-driven?
No, ooh, I don't think
good.
So.
That's good.
It is good, but this means that you seem to be even further from your quarter of reckoning.
Quarter of reckoning!
Which is the eternal pursuit.
It is. We're now 12 quarters away from the quarter of reckoning, or the original quarter of reckoning.
Are you ever going to give up that it might not happen?
I'm not going to Gordon Brown it on this front. I'm afraid that the economy does still work cyclically.
Okay. It's just so it's when, not if.
Very not good. So okay. Joyously, obviously.
No.
Merely observingly.
Yes, that's interesting. Okay. So, Shona, you're talking to lots of hoteliers, and we'll come back to the technology bit because that's of constant interest. But one thing we have noted, and even have had corroborated by other people is that hotels of late, in a sort of post-pandemic era, which, you know, we'll chalk ourselves up as still being in, have been enjoying goppingly high rates due to aforementioned pent-up leisure demand. So without wishing to, let's frame this question in a professional manner. Do you think these staggeringly high rates can last?
I think the answer to all of your questions are going to be, it depends. I think it's very sector specific. So if I thought of the last 12 months, the luxury sector particularly has been very resilient, and a lot of the businesses that we work with in that sector were very much avoiding doing anything on rate as a result of the pandemic and post-pandemic in terms of taking the rates down. So they're like, this is where we are, this is what our value is, this is where we're going to stick to. Our customers are not driven by discounting rate. That isn't going to help us. We need to keep our position in the market. And I think in that sector, the rates that they have been achieving this year, they may well still continue to achieve into next year because of their positioning within the marketplace. But I think when you go and look at mid-market, there is absolutely no way they're going to be able to continue to command the rates that they've been looking at this year. And I think consumers will be drawn down to some extent into like budget economy sector, and that mid-market in the UK, London and provinces, I think is really, really going to struggle. But I think in the luxury and ultra luxury sector, they may well have found their position and not need to take their rates down at the same degree as the mid market, but it has been astronomical this year for sure.
And while rates are amazing, how are you seeing margins? Because it's all very well, isn't it, having been able to charge as much as you feel like, almost in some sectors, but less good if you're also having to pay to heat the rooms.
Yeah, I think what we've seen is the margins have actually improved a bit because there's been a lot more business coming in direct and not, you know, seeing a slight decrease in business that is commissionable, business with high costs. So the margins are actually a little bit better. But again, I think going into next year, there will be a return to saying, okay, we need to go out. What other channels do we need to be looking at? And that will naturally increase costs. What I think businesses are still struggling with is really, really, truly understanding the cost of acquisition. I have not seen a massive improvement in certainly in the commercial side of a true understanding of what the net rate is. So I think there is a risk next year that rates will come down, costs will go back up, and it'll be something that happens almost by accident rather than strategically.
How have people not educated themselves on this so far? Because it's not, you know, it's something we've been hearing about for a decade easily. And it seems bizarre at this point that is it laziness? Is it because, so I was at Hospace last week and we heard quite a lot about how the hospitality sector has been very lucky in the past because they could just charge whatever they wanted for coffee and they didn't have to worry about staff and they didn't have to worry too much about this and that. And now it's, you know, time to start worrying about things and people haven't had to worry before. Was it just that people thought, well, you know, I could pay an OTA this, and it doesn't really matter and you don't really see it? Is that, were people, not wishing to say that everyone is very lazy, but were people lazy?
I would hesitate to use the word lazy. I think there's in some cases, there's a disconnect between commercial and finance. So costs are seen as a finance thing and top line is seen as a commercial thing. And I don't agree with that at all, but that is a kind of legacy way of managing things. And I think some of the visibility as well of the cost, it's still a very manual process if you want to pull out your commission from the five top OTA channels that you're dealing with and your switch fees and your pass-through fees, it's still a very, very manual process to pull off all of that information together. I mean, I'm talking about rooms here. Obviously, there's lots of other areas of cost, but to pull all of that information together into a kind of model that easily gives you a net rate is still quite challenging. A lot of the revenue management systems, for example, they don't have a mechanism for doing this. And even the ones that do, it's still a manual input in the first place to put it in before the calculation comes out the other side. So I think it's quite a hard job. So it's one that gets put to one side a lot of the time.
Yeah, fair enough. But also, you know, ever so slightly alarming as we, you know, trot through the next few months, I would 100%. Have thought that really needs to be something that is understood.
Yeah,
so yes.
Completely.
Okay. So maybe that takes us on to our next question then. What are the priorities for hotels as they look to recession-proof themselves? Work out your acquisition?
Do you always ask the questions in that funny voice, Emily?
This is my BBC video school. I like it. The question I'm asking the rest of the time, it's just me.
I think there's a massive amount of uncertainty, isn't there? And I don't think the autumn statement, such as it was, did us any favours as an industry last week. I think if anything, increased the uncertainty, not gave anyone any reassurance. But I think for me, sadly, having lived through several recessions working in hospitality, is making sure everyone's joined up. So there's this kind of risk of panic and people go, oh, I'm going to do this in F&B, and I'm going to do this in rooms, and I'm going to do this in housekeeping, and I'm going to do this in operation. And people go away and have their plans of how they're going to manage their own areas of the business. Actually, the most important thing is that the whole business is aligned in what their approach is going to be. Because, and commercial particularly, there's this kind of propensity to knee-jerk. So something happens, you look in your business on the books, you think, this, I haven't got on there what I need, and a snap decision is made, which sometimes you live to regret. And I would say the most important thing is understand, you know, what's your position going to be in the market? Are you a leader? Are you a follower? Are you confident about who your comp set are and your positioning versus them? Have you agreed as a team what your strategy is going to be in lots of different scenarios, and doing some kind of modelling of all the different scenarios, so that when different things happen within the recession, you already know what the options are that you're going to follow, but you're following them as a team. So it's sales, marketing, revenue, digital, all working in the same way, not a promotional rate getting sent out where revenue are saying, no, actually, we shouldn't be taking the rates down to that level, and marketing, but this is what we need in order to drive our occupancy. It has to be a joined up strategy. So from a recession proofing point of view, I would just say, make sure you've done a whole load of kind of modelling of all the different scenarios that you can think of based on, you know, based on experience, because there'll be a lot of experience within the hotel teams. And make sure the decisions are made in a joined up way, not knee-jerking every time something changes within the economy, within your local marketplace.
Very wise. Do you see a reduction in corporate travel as part of one of those models? I ask, we can't sort of open a newspaper or read a Twitter feed these days without some pretty hefty organisations saying that they're going to be cutting corporate travel. I think Disney were one of the latest, 25% off corporate travel. That's it, just done. And a lot of others. So this does seem to be something of a trend. And corporate travel over the last 18 months, 2 years, has been patchy, to say the least. So sort of, yeah, discuss, I suppose, without one particular question, but just the whole sort of notion around corporate travel.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think through the earlier part of this year, when I was speaking to colleagues sort of in UK market, they're saying, actually, midweek, our occupancies and our corporate travel, corporate customers have come back stronger than expected. So I think that kind of momentum is not going to continue, and this is part of the uncertainty. But at the same time, we are getting a sense of meetings and events business coming back. So there is a little bit of, if it's contracted, does it give you a base? Is it going to happen? Can you build on top of it? So I think the meetings and events is something that, if that's part of your business, is important to focus on. But I think the corporate travel, for sure, and again, I think what we were talking about earlier is particularly going to affect the mid-market hotels. My experience from years ago working in travel lodges, when you go into that kind of recession, is anyone that was staying in the mid-market, if they are still travelling, they tend to move more into the budget in economy. And you end up with the gaps in that central part of the sector. So absolutely, I think next year it's going to be very, very, very tough from a corporate travel perspective. At the same time, I think there are some trends that hotels can build on, like people that are travelling combining their corporate travel with leisure. So getting an extra night at either end, where people are saying, actually, I'm going to be, I think you said before, Catherine, like a digital nomad. So I can be two days on business, but I'm gonna sit with my laptop and do a bit of business and leisure. And I think hotels need to find ways to encourage people to do that. You can work from anywhere. It doesn't actually matter. And if you can, you know, check out at 4 o'clock and go off to the beach or sit out in the sun, that I think people will take advantage of that. It's starting to become more and more normal. So I think there are some things that businesses can look to do, but for sure the corporate travels, I think, would be very difficult next year.
As ever, the under-demolished mid-market continues.
Does this reflect what we've seen in the recent results season, Catherine? People moving towards... Yeah, exactly. You see how I framed that question beautifully.
Yes, it doesn't. And Marriott's result, well, for two reasons. So first, we look at Marriott, where they were asked, obviously, repeatedly, is everything going to go tits up any second now? And they said, no, it's fine. And even if it did, we would perform better than anyone else. So it's fine. But also, they have 3 weeks visibility. So anything that is coming around the corner to them is going to appear, you know, much larger than it appears in your mirror when it hits, because they've only got 3 weeks to look at it. And I've been continuing to try and find a way to say this that isn't like really bad. And I haven't got there yet, so you have to go with it. The area where most of the branded hotel companies are now focusing, apart from sort of a couple of recent, the recent Marriott deal, which has given them dominance in Latin America, is on the luxury segment. And this kind of recession, this real pocket hitting, milk costs more than you can possibly imagine type recession, as we all know, does not hit the rich people. And the rich people, as Emily has mentioned, as long as nobody's reading the newspapers and freaking out, it will not hit the rich people, and the rich people will carry on traveling. And for the branded hotel segment, which has moved itself over to the luxury market quite effectively in recent years, this should not have much of an impact. Obviously, business travel is a different thing. But as we've seen since the pandemic, everyone's been having to skew themselves towards the leisure market anyway. And that's come with a cost. IHG was amongst many of them to admit they admitted it out loud, which was good of them, which is why I'm naming them, that they'd had to turn to the OTAs because they didn't have a relationship with the leisure traveler. But everyone seems to be on that now. And so maybe they are right to be happy about it. And so while we're all, you know, feeling the cost of milk, we can look at Marriott and think, well, thank goodness, even though I have to pay twice as much for milk, Marriott will continue. I love it.
Yeah, I 100% agree with the luxury sector is just, it's on a completely different plane in terms of how it's affected or not affected from a recession perspective. I think the rest will be. And the whole leisure piece is the big question, isn't it? Because where rooms are being filled with leisure, actually all the way through since post-COVID, is that's what's really going to be impacted now by lack of disposable income. So that's the big question for next year.
So as you say, if you're a mid-market operator now, is not a good time.
Also, turns out, if you do leisure, you get sick, so yeah, don't do it. No one mentioned that in results season, did they? No, they didn't.
Maybe you should test it by travelling for business.
I will do that for the cause. Consider it done. Can we have a little chat about technology? Catherine, I'm going to fling this question over to you because of your recent outing.
My recent update to my phone with its giant...
Because of the new clock on your phone. But also you learned some things when you went to a recent event with some muse folk and some boutique hotel news folk.
Which are those things?
So can you ask the question, please?
Can I say what we're going what was interesting about this event was that we've been hearing a lot about, and we heard a lot about it at Hospays last week as well, that technology is here to save us from not having any staff. Yay! So that's good. But then what I heard at this the Muse Boutique Hotel bit was that it was actually people were getting it because it delivered better service. Are both things true?
Crikey.
And can you now get rid of all your staff?
Yeah, 100%. I don't think having more advanced technology, if you can call it that, is about getting rid of all your staff. I think there's a whole piece around if a move towards putting the customer at the center of your technology decisions, where the technology I think previously legacy is a bit more transactional. It was kind of the customer came in at the end, and you just had a system that helped you run your business. Now the decisions that are being made on technology, the customer has to be at the centre of that in terms of every touch point on the customer journey is supported by technology in some way. And some aspects of that will allow the hotel teams to, sounds a bit trite, but to do more with less. So if they can automate repetitive tasks, you know, WhatsApp messages come in saying where's directions to the hotel, it automatically gets responded to. It doesn't need somebody to do that response. It's just an automated response. That kind of thing, that it means you need less manpower to do that activity. But most businesses would look on that as a way of freeing up staff time to provide better service in a face-to-face or voice type environment. So it's giving people more time as opposed to having fewer people, if that makes sense. However, we have got a staffing crisis in hospitality. So if you are able to do more with less, there's an advantage to that, of course. But I think the other thing is you can't just rely on technology to provide great service. You're still going to need the staff with the right attitude and the right skills to use that technology. And I think the other thing we're seeing a lot of now is solutions get put in, but are they being used effectively? So do the people, so it's like, sounds fantastic, this is going to solve all your problems, but when it's actually deployed, it isn't solving all the problems at all. And that's really an issue of implementation, skills, training, etc. So with every piece of technology that gets put in, there's still a really robust implementation needed. There's really a lot of training that's needed. And in all of that, still making sure that the customer's at the centre of all of that. It's not just a technical deployment. It's like, actually, is it working for your business?
That's an interesting. And yeah, because there's a lot of things going on in tech, in the wider tech sphere, aren't there, that look like not great. Your point about it being sold as a solution isn't the end point at all. It's just merely the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's still that kind of, you go to an event, you see a fantastic solution, like, this is going to be the one for us. When you see it working in reality, it doesn't always deliver what the advertising said it would deliver. And sometimes that's just to do with the deployment. You know, it doesn't mean it can't, it just doesn't.
Very wise words. Is there anything else that we need to talk about? Because has anybody else got any points? If not, I'm going to hurtle towards our little questions at the end.
Hurtle away.
Okie dokes. Shona, what is your most memorable hotel experience? There's that Radio 4 voice again.
I love this question. There's so many. I think the one that always stands out for me is a few years ago, we stayed in a hotel in Sicily, got off one of those horrific early morning flights, you know, arrive at Catania, absolutely exhausted. It's still only 9 o'clock in the morning. You feel like you've been up for the whole day. And we got to this hotel called Villa Carlotta, and I don't actually recall even opening my mouth to say anything, but I walked through the front door. Whether we just looked British, I don't know. But the reception team sort of went, Mr. and Mrs. Whitehead, we're going to have your room ready in an hour. And within sort of 5 minutes, we were sitting on the top floor of the restaurant, Mount Etna on one side, the Mediterranean the other, drinking coffee, eating lemon polenta cake. I'm like, it's the best arrival I've ever had in a hotel. And it's I think the arrival's everything in a hotel. So we were kind of whisked upstairs, and ended up having a fantastic stay. But it's one arrival that we always talk about. I think the best arrival we've ever had in the hotel.
Presumably what you really didn't want to hear at that time is your room's not going to be ready until 3 p.m.
No, it wouldn't have mattered anyway. And I still, to this day, don't know how they knew who we were, because we literally walked through with our bags. 2 minutes later, we were drinking coffee and eating cake. But yeah, it was great.
Well, that's absolutely superb. And that first impression clearly counts. Hi, Spuds. Nice of you to join us.
Spuds is all about the welcome, aren't you, Spuds?
All about the welcome. Yeah,
there was a welcome to be had. And so he's come to deliver it.
The best thing about the sector is?
I think hospitality is just a big family. I love the fact that having worked in hotels for years and years and years, I've got clients that have become associates. I've got associates that become client, people that used to work with me that I'm now doing work for. And you know, even though it's such a huge sector, it does still seem relatively small in a lot of cases. You know, when you go to events, you see people that you've known for years and years and years. And I think we really saw it during COVID, is that people just want to help each other. So there's a lot of support out there. But I do like the fact that hospitality it's just like one big family. I love it.
It is indeed. The sector would be significantly improved if?
I'm going to talk a little bit about technology now. So one of the challenges I have with technology is that I don't think it's seen as part of the asset value in hospitality. So it's seen as an enabler, if you're lucky, or in worst case, something you just have to keep things going. And the big challenge is it's not seen as part of the asset value. So if you've got businesses that are getting flipped, you know, sort of every 2, 3, 4 years, quite often bad decisions are made just to keep systems going rather than making an investment that then becomes part of the value of the asset. So I think if there was a way to have technology seen much more as part of the value of the asset, it would change the way that businesses use and maintain their technology for the better.
I like that a lot. I think that's, yes. We've skirted around that sort of mindset viewpoint on the podcast, but I think that very eloquently put.
Yes, and I was thinking earlier when you talked about the customer and how the customer is at the focus, because obviously one of the things that the hotel sector, particularly the branded hotel sector, suffers from, or not necessarily suffers from, but is marked by, is that the customer is usually the owner, not usually the person who's sleeping in your bed.
Yeah. That's true.
Very good. Are we on? We're on. What the industry needs now is.
I've put a crystal ball.
Oh, lovely! Yep, have some of that.
I just think there's such a massive amount of uncertainty that businesses are going to have to try and create their own certainty. And I think it goes back to what we talked about before about saying, what's your strategy and what are the 10 different things that might happen. And putting some time into working through what those scenarios might be. But there, I think, Catherine, you said before you've been reading different articles saying different things, and it's like every article you read says something different. Which one do you believe? Eventually, businesses are just going to have to like choose a direction and go for it. But there's a lot of different difficult decisions coming up. You know, I'm seeing hotels like luxury properties now, I've seen a couple recently, they're now closed on a Monday and Tuesday every week. They're only, it's such a strange scenario that we're going through. So yeah, a crystal ball would be good.
Yeah. And we saw that during the pandemic, didn't we? Those hotels that managed to stay open, or hospitality venues that managed to stay open, it was much easier to kind of, I appreciate we're talking about a short closure time as opposed to an extended one, but it's a lot easier to ramp back up if you haven't had to do that shuttering. So presumably if you're doing that even for a couple of days a week, that's still a significant disruption to your general operations, not really what you want.
No, and I would say so, because I can understand why it might be needed, because it gives you consistent days off for your team, etc. But yeah, closing for 2 days and then starting all over again, I think would be very, very hard. And I think businesses are also going to be going back to this, putting inventory out, you know, we're only going to sell up to 80% or 70% because of costs, because of staffing issues, etc. So all these decisions that maybe we thought we'd left behind you know, 6 to 12 months ago, I think are going to come back to the four now.
Which takes us neatly on to the last question, which is, I'd like to think we've learned from the pandemic,
Creativity and resilience, I think. We saw so many businesses thinking and doing things differently. Some of those businesses went back to kind of the normal afterwards. So I think of, you know, hotels that were doing home, you know, home packs or letterbox cocktails or that kind of thing, and have just stopped. And we're now seeing other businesses start to do that again. It's like, what are the other revenue streams that we can follow? So I think that creativity we learned is going to come back again to the fore, using your inventory and facilities for different purposes, etc. But, you know, as a business, we are very, very resilient. But yeah, it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard few months next year, that's for sure.
And things like creativity and scenario planning, I mean, they should be part of everyday business practice. It's easy to see them as something to do when storm clouds loom, but I don't purport to be someone who's got a multitude of different scenarios planned or particularly creative, but they should be, shouldn't they, part of best business practice?
I think they both should be. I completely agree with you, but when you're working at a level where incredibly busy and incredibly successful top line wise, they tend to get put to one side. It's like, we're doing really well, we don't need to plan on any other scenarios because the scenario that we're following is working. So we don't need to think about, oh, what if next week the other shoe drops? You know, it's, we just keep going. And I think with the creativity, is some of it has been retained, but some of it has been, we don't need to do that anymore. As opposed to sitting down and making a considered decision to say, what do we want to keep? Is it really not needed, or should we keep going with whatever ideas or whatever new initiatives we had? And some businesses have very, very successfully, and others haven't. So yeah, it'd be good to have the creativity and the scenario planning as part of your everyday scenario, but I'm not sure that is always the case, to be honest.
Absolutely. Day jobs to be done. Thank you so much, Shona. That's given us like oodles of food for thought and hopefully helped a lot of people in what, as you say, sort of tricky times ahead, unless you're running a luxury hotel, in which case
you'll be fine.
Happy day. It was an absolute joy to see you. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
And sharing your wise words. We wish you a happy rest of your week, hopefully slightly drier than this morning. Lovely to see you. And thank you, Catherine. Thanks, Spuddy. Spuddy has come for his... Oh, no, he's still there.
He's
still there.
Ah, there, with his eyes of judgment. Useful thoughts. Well, it was lovely to have you back, Catherine, as co-host. Thanks very much.
And hope you recover soon from your hospitality.
Thanks. Thank you. And how is your clock doing on your phone?
Still abnormally large.
That's what we all want to know. Good. Okay. Well, that concludes the podcast for this week. Thank you so much for joining us, Shona, and thank you everybody for listening. And do share and like and subscribe and all those things, and join us again for another episode of New Tricks next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye-bye now.
So that concludes our thoughts for this week. Thank you to everyone involved in creating this episode and providing something for your ears whilst walking the dog, washing the cat, chopping the veg, or however else you pass the time while podcasting.
Please do review and subscribe if you get your ear entertainment via Apple, or follow New Tricks if your ear delight comes from Spotify. These things make a difference, apparently. Until next time.